Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside.
Episode 22, On Frozen Wings. Hello, welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Ruth.
And I'm Gary. You can talk to us by using Twitter, MySpace or Facebook. Or you can send us an email to gary@celticmythpodshow.com. or ruth@celticmythpodshow.com. As we get busier and busier, we're finding that it's taking us longer to answer emails. So hang on in there and you will get a reply.
You can also start a conversation in our forums, especially if you want to talk about Celtic mythology. It's our dearest hope that some of you clever bods out there will take some time to come along and help us all learn something.
Absolutely. Let's have some news and views. Talking about the forums, we've started a new section for those of you who are interested in your Celtic roots. The Celts were incredibly nomadic throughout the centuries, and we've gradually spread throughout the world. Many of our clans are now widely dispersed, and family and tribe still mean an awful lot to us.
So although we don't specialise in family history and genealogy, a lot of our listeners who love the Celtic stories also want to track down their distant families. If you fall into this category, pop along to our forum and make a post in our new section. Or if you're lucky enough to find your relatives, you can start up a communication with them there.
Good luck to you all. Shall we move on to the story?
Yes, let's. Today's tale was rediscovered by the folklorist Douglas Hyde in 1916, and its age is actually unknown. It's set in the time of St. Kieran, who was born in 516 AD. Do you want to set the scene for us, Gary?
Sure. Our story begins one crisp morning in ancient Ireland, as Kieran sends two monks out along the Shannon to collect fresh rushes for thatching on his church. Little do they know that the weather is about to take a turn for the worse. Holy patron saint, noble and distinguished, there was in the land of Erin of a time 500 years after the coming of the White Christ. His name was Ciaran, the little dark one of Clun. A good faith had he in the mighty Lord. One day, Ciaran bade his clerics to go look for thatch for his church. On a Saturday of all days. Those who were so bidden were Selmin, son of Biogan, and Maulon, son of Noi. For they were both men submissive to God, and many miracles were performed by Maulon, as Ciaran said in the stanza,
Maulon, son of Noi the cleric, his right hand be for our benison. If the son of Noi desired it, he could work miracles like every saint.
And moreover, Selmin, son of Biogan, he was the same man of whom, for wisdom, for piety, and for religion, Ciaran spake the stanza,
Selmin, melodious son of Biogan, a faith godlike and firm, not blemish is on his body, his soul is an angel.
He was the seventh son of the sons of Biogan of Burren, and those men were the seven psalmists of Ciaran. The youth's cross on the Shannon is named after them, as well as the other youth's cross that is on the high road of Clun Vignoish, that is now called Clonmacnoise. So the clerics fared forth along the Shannon until they reached Clun Doif. There they filled up their little curragh with the white-bottomed, green-topped rushes that they cut. Before they'd finished, they heard the voice of the cleric's bell at the time of Vespers on Sunday, and they decided that they would not leave that place until the day would rise on the Monday. And they composed this lay to the King of Sunday.
The voice of a bell I hear in Cruel, on Sunday night defeating us. I shall not depart since that has been heard until Monday, after the Sunday. On Sunday did God shape out heaven. On that day was the King of the Apostles born. On Sunday was born Mary, mother of the King of Mercy. On Sunday, I say it, was born victorious John Baptist. By the hand of God in the stream in the east was he baptized on Sunday. On Sunday, moreover, it is a true thing, the Son of God took the captivity out of hell. On a Sunday after the battle shall God deliver the judgment on the last day. On a Sunday night, we think it melodious, the voice of the cleric I hear, the voice I hear of a bell on Druim Diobred above the pool, the voice of the bell I hear calling me to rest, the voice of the bell I hear bringing me to Cloon. By thy hand, O youth here, and by the King who created thee, my heart thinks them delightful, both the bell and the voice.
So the clerics made camp that night by the Shannon, for the love of the King of Sunday. During the night, there arose against them bad weather. Great rain with a biting frost and blinding prolonged snow. Wind and tempest in the elements brought such a rigour of cold for their scathen their hurt that it was a misery for all those for whom it had been fated to be placed in a bodily form, and to be that night without the convenience of a bothy or shelter or a lean-to of a bed or a fire for them. Surely, had it not been for the mercy of God protecting them round about, neither of them thought that he would be alive on the morrow after that night, with all their experience of oppression and terror from the great tempest of that wild weather. They never remembered their acts of piety, or to say or sing a prayer, nor could they sleep or rest, for their senses were turned to foolishness. For they'd never seen the like or the equal of that storm, and of the bad weather of that night, for the venom of its cold, and moreover for the bitterness of the morning which followed it. And as they were there on the morning of the next day, they heard a gentle, low, lamentable, woebegone conversation of grief high above their heads from a nest on a tall, wide-extended cliff. Understanding the speech of birds and beasts by virtue of their holiness, they paid attention to the conversation and observed it, even though much evil and anxiety had they suffered that night. And they between whom the conversation was were these, namely an eagle, who was called Leyen, and a bird of its clan in dialogue with her. They were piteously and complainingly lamenting their cold state, pitifully, sadly, grievously. And the bird said to the eagle,
Lane, do you ever remember the like of this morning or last night have come within your knowledge before?
I do not remember that I have ever heard or saw the like of the equal of it since the world was created. And do yourself remember, did you ever hear of such weather?
There are people who do remember.
Who are they?
Duvhotha, the black-footed one of Bingolban, that is the vast-sized stag of the deluge, who is at Bingolban. And he is the hero with the oldest memory of all those in his generation in Erin.
A marvel it is that you know that.
And although that the stag be far away from me, I shall go to see him, to see if I can win any knowledge from him.
Then Leyin took off lightly, yet was she scarcely able to rise up high with the strength of the bad weather, and no more could she go low with the cold of the frost and with the great abundance of the driving rain. Though it was difficult for her, she progressed lightly and low flying, and no one living could reveal or make known all that she met of evil and of misery going to Ben Gulben, looking for the Blackfoot. And she found the small-headed, swift-footed stag scratching himself against a dead oak stump. Leyin descended on a branch of the bare stump beside him. She saluted the stag in his own language and asked him if he was the Blackfoot. The stag said that he was, and Leyin spake the lay as follows.
Well for your Blackfoot on Ben Gulben High, many moors and marshes leap you lightly by. Hounds no more shall hunt you since the Fenians fell, feeding now untroubled on from glen to glen. Tell me, stag high-headed, saw you ever foal such a night and morning? You remember all.
I will give you answer, Leyin wise and grey. Such a night and morning never came my way.
Tell me, Blackfoot, what is your age?
I'll tell you. I remember this oak here when it was a little oaklet, and I was born the same year at the foot of the oak that was there. And I was reared upon that couch of moss at its foot until I was a mighty great stag. And I have always loved this abode because I was reared in it. The oak grew after that till it was a giant oak, and I used to come and constantly scratch myself against it every evening after my journeyings and goings during the day. I always used to remain beside it in such wise till the next morning, and neither travel nor hunting used to affect me till I used to reach this same tree. So the tree and I grew up with one another. Eventually I became a mighty great stag, and this tree became the bare withered stump which you see. Though now it is only a big decayed stump, devoid of blossom or fruit or foliage today, its period and life being spent. Now I have let a long period of time go by me, yet I never saw and never heard tell of in all that time the like of last night.
Leyin departs to return to her birds after that, and on her reaching home, the second bird spoke to her.
Have you found what you went to inquire about?
I have not,
said Leyin. And she began to blame the bird for all the cold and the hardships she had endured. But at the last, she said,
Who do you think again would obtain the knowledge of this for me?
I can answer that. Duf Goya, the black caller of Clonfert of Bekorn.
Well then, I'll go to him.
And although that was far away from her, yet she proceeded until she reached Clonfert of Bekorn, and she watched the birds until they had finished their feeding and were returning home. Then Leyin saw one splendid bird approaching her, beautifully topped and victorious looking, of the size of a blackbird, but of the brightness of a swan. And as soon as it came into her presence, Leyin asked it whether it was the Duf Goyr. It said that it was. It was a marvel to Leyin when it said that it was, namely, that the blackbird should be white. and Leyin spake the lay.
O Dovgoyr, sweet is thy warbling. Often hast thou sung thy calls throughout the blue-leaved forest. From Clonfert of the bright streams thou searchest the full plain of the Liffey, and from the plain of the Liffey coming from the east to Kildare behind it. From there thou wentest to thy nest in the coal which breed blessed. Short was it for thee to leap over every hedge till thou camest to the townland in which Beorhtn is wont to be. O Dovgoyr, tell to me, and to count up all thy life, the like of yesterday morning, did it ever overtake thee?
To me, my full life was 300 years before Beorhtn. All through the lifetime of Beorhtn I was enduring in lasting happiness. At one time with me was Loki of the Blades, for a while in the sovereignty of all Erin. I remember so much. Yet I never experienced by sea or by land such weather as that which Leyin mentions in her lay.
Well then, my own errand to you is to inquire if there ever overtook you, or if you remember seeing or have heard that there ever came such a morning as yesterday for badness.
I do not remember that I ever saw such, or anything like it.
As for Leyin, she was sad and sorrowful, because her knowledge was none the greater for this, and she proceeded on her way till she returned to her nest and birds.
What tidings have you to tell us today? May you never have luck nor fortune. I have none, but I am as I was when I was departing. Except all my weariness from all the journeys and wanderings which you contrived to get me to take, without my getting anything great or small of profit or advantage out of you.
And with that, she gave a greedy, venomous drive of her beak at the bird, so she had liked to make a prey and flesh-torn spoil of it. With vexation at all the evil and misery she had experienced going to Kildare, so that the bird screeched out loudly and pitifully and miserably. A while after that, Leyin said,
"'Tis a pity and a grief to me, if anyone in Erin knows, that there ever came a night worse than that night, and I myself do not know of it.
Well then, indeed, there is another one who knows, the Gol of Esrua, the blind one of Asrul, and another name of him is Enya of Athshone, the salmon of Ballyshannon. And is certain he knows about that, if anyone in the world knows about it.
It is hard for me to go the way you tell me, yet I would like exceedingly well to win knowledge about this thing."
Howsoever, she set out, and she never came down until she reached Asaro of Macmodern, and she began watching and scrutinizing Asaro until she saw the salmon feeding at the pond. She saluted him and said,
"That is a pleasant life, O girl. It is not with thee as it is with me, for our woes are not the same."
And she spake the lay,
"Pleasant is that life of thine, O girl, with success. Many is the stream which thou hast adventured. Thou art not the same way as we are. It is to thee that I have come from my house, O blind one of Asaro. How far does thy memory go back, or how far is thy age to be reckoned?"
"As for memory, that is a long one. It is not easy to reckon it. There is not in land or in bush a person like me. None like me, but myself alone. I remember. It is no short remembrance, the displacing showers of the deluge. Four women and four men there remained after it in the world. I remember Patrick of the Pens coming into the land of Erin, and the Theobald, Virile the Assembly, coming from Greece to take possession of it. Truly do I mind me of Fintan's coming into the country beside me. Four men were the crew of his ships, and an equal number of females. I
remember gentle Barthlands taking the kingship over Ulad. I remember a while before that, Glass and Avambita in Emania. I chanced to be one morning that was not fair on this river, Olaen. I never experienced a morning like that, either before it or after it. I gave a leap into the air under the brow of my hard rock here, and before I came down into my watery house, this pool was one flag of ice. The bird of prey seized me above the land with a furious, ungentle onslaught and bore away my clear blue eye. Oh, to me it was not a pleasant world.
Well, now, my own object in coming to you was to inquire of you whether you remember such a morning as yesterday was.
Indeed, I saw such a morning. I remember the coming of Padwan and of Fintan, and the children of the men, the Finbold and Tuadeg Nan, and the Fomorians, and the sons of my liege, and Patrick, son of Alperin. And I remember how Erin threw off from her those bands. And I remember a morning that was worse than that morning. And another morning, apart from the great showers out of which the deluge fell. And the deluge left only four men and four women, namely Noah, son of Leviach, and his wife Shem, Cam, and Japheth, and their three wives. For in truth, that was the crew of the Ark. Howbeit, wise men truly recount that God left another four keeping knowledge and tribal descent and preserving universal genealogies. For God did not wish the histories of the people to fade. And so he left Fintan, son of Leviach, towards the setting of the sun, southward, keeping an account of the west of the world. And moreover, Friomsa Forthachta, keeping lordships of the north. And the prophet and the apostle duly ordering the history of the south. And these are they who are alive outside of the ark. And I remember all those people. And, Lain, I never saw the like of that morning for Venom. Except for one other morning that was worse than the morning you speak of. And worse than any warning that ever came before it. It was thus. One day that I was in this pool, I saw a beautifully coloured butterfly with purple spots in the air over my head. I sprang to catch it, but before I came down, the whole pool had become one flag of ice behind me. So when I fell back, it bore me up on that ice. And then there came the bird of prey to me. On her seeing me in that condition, she made a greedy, venomous assault on me and plucked the eye out of my head. And it was owing to my weight that she was not able to lift me high. And she threw the eye into the pool. And we both wrestled together until we broke the ice with the violence of the struggle and the heat of the great amount of crimson-red blood that was pouring from my eye. So the ice was broken by that, and with that difficulty I got back into the pool. And that's how I lost my eye. Oh, it is certain, Olaen, that that was by far the worst morning that I ever saw. And worse than this morning that you speak of.
Now as for the clerics, they took counsel with one another and determined to await the eagle's return, that her tidings might overtake them. However, they experienced such hardships and anguish, such cold and misery that night, that they could not, despite their resolution, endure to wait for the eagle's return. So Maulorn the cleric said,
I myself beseech the powerful Lord and the chosen Trinity that the eagle Laen may come with the knowledge he receives to Clungvik Nuish, and
tell it to Ciaran." And at that, they themselves departed. Now as for Gol the Salmon, he asked Leyen after that, who was it that sent her in pursuit of that knowledge?
"It was the second of my own birds."
"That is sad, for that bird is greatly older than you, or than I either. That is the bird that plucked my eye out to me. And if she had desired to tell you all these things, it would have been easy for her. That bird is the old hawk of Ochil, and its talons have got blunted with old age. And since its vigor and energy and power of providing for itself have departed from it, its way of getting food is to go from one nest to another, smothering and killing every bird young and eating them. And for that reason, you will never overtake your own birds alive. Oh, beloved friend, best friend that I ever saw. If you only succeed in catching her alive on your return, remember all the tricks she's played you, and avenge your birds and your journeyings and your wanderings upon her. And then, too, remember to avenge my eye."
Leyen bade farewell to Gol, and off she went the selfsame way she had come, in a mighty swift course, for she felt certain now that she would not overtake her birds alive, nor her aerie. Oh, and good cause had she for that dread, for she only found the place of the nest, wanting its birds, they having been eaten by the hawk of Ochil. So that all Leyen got as a result of her errand was the loss of her birds. But the old hawk of Ochil had departed after its despoiling the nest, so that Leyen did not come on it, and neither did she know what way it had gone. Another thing, too. Leyen had to go every Monday, because of the cleric's prayer, to Clunvic Noish, and there the eagle perched upon the great pinnacle of the round tower of Clunvic Noish, and revealed herself to the holy patron, namely Ciaran. Ciaran asked her for her news, and Leyen said that she was not more grieved at her wanderings and loss than that. And thereupon Ciaran said that he would give her good price and reward for her storytelling, namely, every time that her adventures should be told, if it was storm or excessive rain that was in it at the time of the telling, it should be changed into fine sky and good weather. Leyen said that it was understood by her all along that it was not her bird or her eyrie she would receive from him, and since that might not be, she was pleased that her journeying and wandering should not go for nothing. And thereupon Leyen related her goings from the beginning to the end, just as we've told them here. She flew back to her eyrie and gazed at the empty nest, her heart full of loss for her young, knowing that she and her birds would be remembered down through the years whenever the bitterness of the weather drove people to shelter. And those are the adventures of Leyen, up until this present day. In our next episode, we hear more about the mysterious Bov the Red.
Let's continue with some listener feedback.
We've had some super comments and feedback, and we'll fit in as many as we can. We heard from Joanne on MySpace, and she says,
"I loved the special show. I'm always looking for new Celtic-influenced music, and you pick some gems."
Thank you, Joanne. There is some really cracking Celtic music out there, isn't there? Have you heard Mark Gunn's Irish and Celtic Music podcast? He plays some great music. We try and find those tracks with a mythological or fae link. What else does she say?
"I'm so looking forward to the Welsh myths. I read the Mabinogion years ago. Very strange from what I remember. I'll have to do a reread to refresh the old grey matter."
Well, it looks as though we'll be moving on to the Welsh myths next, Joanne. So hang on in there.
"Keep up the good work. Your efforts are very much appreciated by this fan."
You're more than welcome, Joanne. And we'll keep going as long as we can.
Yes, we will. At last count, we reckon we had enough material to keep us going for 5 years.
We did.
We certainly did, yes. And now we think that may be overly conservative. Thank you, Joanne. It was lovely to hear from you.
Yes, thank you. There is just so much wonderful material.
And now we'd like to bring you a promo for the UCD Scholarcast. This is a podcast of a series of lectures produced by University College Dublin, covering Irish studies in art, music and literature.
The lectures are great, and they range from the influence of mythic archetypes right down to river dance. Let's listen to PJ Matthews and the Scholarcast promo.
Hello, I'm PJ Matthews from the School of English Drama and Film at University College Dublin. UCD Scholarcast is dedicated to the publication of quality academic scholarship in audio download format to a wide academic audience of scholars, graduate students, undergraduates, and interested others. Each Scholarcast is accompanied by a transcript of the lecture to facilitate citation in written academic work. The inaugural Scholarcast series addresses the disciplinary field of Irish studies and is entitled The Art of Popular Culture from the Meeting of the Waters to River Dance. This Scholarcast series consists of the following lectures: Doing Something Irish, From Thomas More to River Dance, by PJ Matthews; The Boy is National Hero, The Legacy of Cuchulainn, by Elaine Sisson; W.B. Yeats, Journalism and the Revival, by Eddie Holt; James Joyce and Popular Culture, by Anne Fogarty; Neutrality and Popular Culture, by Claire Wills; Hollywood and Contemporary Irish Drama, by Paige Reynolds; Globalising Irish Music, by Bill Whelan; and Filming Freel, Lunasa on Screen, by Frank McGuinness.
And before we go, we'd like to send a shout out to the Maskery clan, who are the first to call out in the gathering place on our forums.
We'd also like to say a big thank you to James, Haiku and Ian from Derby for their reviews in iTunes. These reviews really do help our show get noticed, and we really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much. Well, that just about wraps it up for this show. So it just remains for us to say...
Slongavoil!
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com. We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us a quick email or voice feedback by emailing either Gary, that's G-A-R-Y, or Ruth, R-U-T-H, at CelticMythPodShow.com. You can chat to us in the forums on our website. The show notes for this episode can also be found on the website. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. You heard Hag Hole at the beginning and are listening to The Skylark now. You can find out more about this foot-stomping band at www.sfhounds.com. And thanks again to Diane Arkinstone and Kim Robertson, whose music has been used for some of the incidental music in this podcast. You'll find links to their websites in our show notes.